I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. This morning, I'd also like to welcome Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
I don't think I've ever actually welcomed either of you in this adventure and podcast. I've just always expected you to be here. So I apologize for that oversight.
Yeah.
Please, feel welcome.
I have other things on my plate. I have responsibilities. I have another podcast, and you can never have too many podcasts. And so
it is a gross oversight on my part, and I apologize. I've always welcomed the listeners, but I want to welcome the two of you as well.
I believe also,
you
always, a merciful God. So
you always introduce Garrett first.
I'm a creature of habit.
Just something to think about.
You know, you put your best foot forward and
give your best idea first when
you're
doing
it. That's right. People hear Father Garrett Burton like, oh, okay. I'll listen to this. Father Drew Hoffman. Oh, okay.
Here,
I'll endure it.
Well, today, I told last week the listeners to imagine what the podcast might be named after.
Pins and needles.
So today we are recording in the St. Peter Chanel studio.
Okay.
Any reason or any guesses why? I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. Chanel, Chanel.
Well, his name's Peter. Is that the reason?
Nope.
That seems pretty basic.
No, yes. Nope.
He was in Australia, the Pacific Ocean, somewhere on an island, which are famously rocks that come out of the sea.
You are actually super close on that, other than the last part. You kind of veered off the trail there. He is the patron of Samoans.
Okay.
Which is Dwayne the Rock Johnson is a Samoan.
All right.
Why you said that?
No, it's not. I know this is the only thing I knew about.
You're just trying to get into Chad's mind. Yeah. This is how it works.
But where you were close is he was the first martyr of Oceania.
Okay.
So he was a French priest, 1800s. His superior, I think he was, I forget the name of the order. They take St. Peter and one other guy. They drop him off in this island just north of Fiji. The island's called Futuna.
Okay.
And they're we'll be back in 6 months. 5 years passes before they ever actually return to it. So just him and one other priest on this completely uncatechized island, and they're working to evangelize and frankly not doing a very good job. It was not a very successful mission until the son of the chief of that local island was considering becoming Catholic, and so St. Peter was preparing to receive him into the church, and that didn't sit too well with the chief, so Peter was clubbed to death by the warriors. But within 2 years, the entire island was Catholic after that. So years working, no progress, chief murders him, and then 2 years later, entire island is Catholic. And so that's why he's the patron saint of the Samoans, the first martyr of Oceania, and our sponsor for the studio today.
There should be a cool quote about how martyrs dying brings forth life in the church. That's something we'll think about, maybe.
The blood of the martyrs.
Oh, we got something there.
Seems to recollect something in my mind.
Okay, you did good.
There you go.
Okay, that was...
I feel like we could have a segment of the podcast just called Better Know a Saint. I don't know if you remember like the old Colbert show.
Better Know a District.
So we could have Better Know a Saint. And then when we run out of that, we could do Better Know a Priest of the Diocese, which I feel like we kind of do that a lot about talking about priests. Or we could bring them on as guests, or we could talk about them.
Season 2 is going to be electric.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So we just...
How good was Colbert Report?
What's that?
How good was Colbert Report?
It was so good.
It was great. It was great.
It was. It really was fantastic.
Yeah.
Better Know a Saint. Here. And so to continue the next segment of Better Know a Priest, I thought we could talk about our childhood pastors. Because most guys, that's going to influence them, hopefully in a positive way in their vocational sense. I know certainly my childhood pastor was a big influence on me, Father Dan Specksarth, who I would consider my childhood pastor.
Yes, so I was baptized by Monsignor Magreed at St. Francis.
That's got to bring extra grace.
Yeah, I think that's basically it. And I remember he had an awesome voice. That's really all I remember as a kid about that. Father Hotze, it was just for a couple years. But the one I consider most is Father Daryl Beffert. He was there for,
He was there a long time.
Yeah, over 12 years. So yeah, and he's just a great priest, super solid. And we had a ton of associates come through there too. So I think just combining that, I saw, you know, just a lot of different types of priests and all good and solid and manly and fun. I think Father Darrell, the cool thing I always saw about him is he's a great like carpenter. And just to see that that gift, is, he actually used that even in the priesthood. Like he built a movable baptismal font that we could use for the vigil. He basically was like the lead foreman or whatever on the job to build a new stewardship hall.
He and built one of our main, our dining room tables here at the House of Formation. So Father Darrell, he came in for dinner one time, like, you guys need a bigger table for that. We do, but they're expensive. I'll build you one. Yeah. And so he built us this enormous table that can seat like 12 people around it.
We needed some hobbies.
I know. Well,
my hobbies are not helpful.
Scooter riding. Yeah, is.
And playing golf. I mean.
But that was, it was cool for me to see growing up that, like, and I think in my discernment, that was deep in there of like, I don't have to crush my personality to be a priest. You know, I don't have to leave all these things that I love.
Very true.
God's going to use that in some way for the good of others and for his glory. So
even if it's something like scooter racing, yeah, God will find a way to bring good out of that.
What if the man that I was racing ends up becoming a priest? I guess he's laughing now. Interesting. What a, the blood of the martyrs.
Yeah, the blood of the chaplains gives seed to the vocations.
My childhood pastor was Father Billinger. My whole, pretty much my whole childhood. He was the first. When I moved to Seas as a kindergartner, that he was there. And when I got into high school is when he moved from Seas to Holy Savior. But at that time, I was more focused at Bishop Carroll than at St. Elizabeth. And Father Van Haverbeek was there. It was great. But I was more with Carroll than anything else. But you guys know Father Billinger, just the man. I told the story a few weeks ago how my mom said we had to call him Father Billinger.
I love
Billinger
that story, yeah.
And not Father Jim or Father James or whatever. But just deep respect for the priesthood. That was one of the things that instilled in my heart, just respect for the holiness of this man. And a couple things that I remember specifically is his power with names. And that's something I try to take really seriously now. And that was where it started. That's something my parents still talk about, is how Father Billinger had this massive parish and always knew my parents' names back before there was any reason for him to know them, that, you know, we were in high school or things like that, or thinking about seminary or whatever the case might be. Just another family. There's hundreds of the same exact family, basically, at Seas, it would seem. But he knew the names, and hearing stories about him looking through the directory to memorize photos and things like that. And then I remember this fateful day when we're out at recess and Father Billinger came out and played basketball for the first time. And I picture it. And I'm sure it wasn't as dramatic, but he's like doing back reverse layups and things like that. And then of course we found out that Father Billinger played football at Wichita State, which blew our minds. And then, so that even similar with the personality, but this, as a guy who liked sports, to see this athletic man who I respected deeply as a priest of Jesus Christ stuck with me forever. Mm-hmm. And then I never knew this till my ordination, but my parents gave me this note he had written to them when they, I think, were donating to the new church project or something like that, but said something like, I could see Drew being a priest someday when I was in second grade. And so Prophet. My parents gave that to me with a picture of me at my first communion with Father Billinger.
That's cool.
At my ordination. And so.
Yeah. Mine was Father Dan Spexarth. He came to St. Peter's when I was in second grade. So we had a older priest before that I just mostly remember kind of being scared of. And then Father Dan, it was his first pastorate, so he's a young priest. Uh-oh. And he comes in there and he's on fire. And anyone that knows Father Dan Spexarth knows I would consider him one of the best homilists in the diocese. I mean, he's in the top tier. There are homilies he gave when I was a little kid that I still remember today and steal. Like, I have used Father Dan homilies that I heard when I was maybe in third or fourth grade that I still am like, that was really good. I'm just going to write that off as my own now. And he was up there till about junior high. And then Father Pat York came in, who is also a great example and a great influence on me. But I don't really consider him childhood because it was junior high, high school. One of the other things I remember about Father Dan Spexarth is he instituted donuts after Monday morning mass. And as a little kid, we never had that in the house, partly because I think we were health conscious, partly because my parents were going to spend money on something as silly as donuts. And so I remember as a little kid in the summertime going to Monday morning mass for the sole purpose, because I knew there would be donuts afterwards and that was the only time I could get donuts. So much of my love of the mass starts at a young age and Father Dan Spexarth offering donuts, because I was the only child there. So it was mostly old people. So they didn't. So sometimes I got two donuts because, you know, some old lady like, I don't need them. I got you covered here. So donuts played a big part in my love of the Lord. It was, never mind. The other thing that Father Dan brought to the parish is he wanted to make it, it was an expanding parish at the time, and so a bigger community. So he really instituted a big parish festival. And the thing I remember as a kid is there were mud pits. Like, there was always some game that involved mud pits. So, you know, me and all of the other third, fourth, fifth, you know, the kids, you know, there was a balance beam with a sword fight over a mud pit, or there was a tug of war. As a kid, I remember looking forward to, I mean, that was almost more fun than the 4th of July parish festival, because there'd be these games and it really was a community. And Father Dan was just kind of a rock star walking around. He's another one, great gift for names and just, you know, touching base and talking with people. There'd be a live band there playing music in the evening and a beer trailer. And, you know, obviously I wasn't part of that.
Yes, of course.
well, in St. Peter's, you know, you could maybe get by with that. but just really brought the community together. And he would come to dinner at the house, come over to dinner, and just as a kid, just wide-eyed, because he was something so different than what we had, so in love with the work he was doing, so passionate about it, and really just helping this parish grow and become something more. It was a great inspiration for me to see that, and like, I couldn't articulate it the way I do today, but just the way he lived his priesthood had a huge influence on me as a child, and seeing that this was something good and wonderful. So I am grateful to him for that example that he provided for me all those years ago. One of the stories I remember, Father Dan is a storyteller homilist, which is not my style. I'm not good at that, but he always has a story in there. And I don't remember the rest of the homily, but I remember the story that his parents had left town, and Father Dan grew up on a farm with a bunch of siblings. And so the parents were just gone for like a weekend or something. Like, the rule was the kids could not leave the property, but there was a baseball game going on that they really wanted to watch. And so they had figured out in their head, the truck is part of our parents' property. So as long as nobody gets out of the truck, we can go to this
and not
break the rules or lie. And so they like piled all of the little spec stars in the back of the truck bed and drove out and watched the entire game from the truck and then drove back home. And when mom and dad go, no, we never left the property. Exactly. As you said, which is brilliant on a lot of levels.
And I have no idea what that homily would have been.
No idea.
I can't fathom, but I'm sure it was.
But I heard that story at 9 years old and I remember it today. And that's perfect. The power of Dan Spexarth right there. Yeah, so he definitely awoke in me a desire to be a priest, a desire to be like him, a desire to do something for the Lord, like what I saw he was doing. And that's where I kind of want to take the conversation today, this idea of a desire within us to do something for the Lord. You could maybe call it holy ambition. I don't know if that's a correct term or not, because I think a lot of us, or I know at least with myself, there's almost an embarrassment to admit, I want to be a saint, but I'm also kind of shy. Like, I do want to do something good and helpful and important for the Lord. Not that my name be known or anything, but because I love the Lord, I want to give you something good. And there's that strong desire in me. And I think that desire in some way has always been there. And as I look back on it now, it's actually kind of a helpful discernment tool to say, yeah, there was always this desire to do something for the Lord, and almost ambitious in a positive way. And what really brought that into clarity for me, it was after I was ordained, and I was in my first assignment down in Pittsburgh, Kansas, and there's a bit of a local legend down there, Chuck Smith. I don't know if either of you have ever met Chuck before.
Is he a football coach? Yeah.
Longtime football coach at St. Mary's Colgan. He's in the Kansas Hall of Fame. He was a successful quarterback for Pitt State when he was in college. He went for like a 66 game winning streak as coach from like 2000 to 2004. That class never lost a football game. Wow. I mean, just great record. But what was awesome is he's a tremendous coach, but more than that, he's a tremendous man, very faithful, very devout Catholic, the type you would want your sons to learn from, because he's going to make them better men. So I was chaplain at the high school. I'm hanging out on the sideline during football practice, as I would do one time, just kind of talking with Chuck a little bit and watching the guys run through the drills. And I asked him, Chuck, what do you look for in a guy? Kind of laughs a little bit. He said, well, I'm not actually usually looking for just the best player. Father, I was never the best player out there. There were always better quarterbacks. They're always better at reading defense. There were better players. He says, what I look for a lot is the guy that wants the ball. The guy that's going to push himself and is going to do everything he can to get the ball and wants that opportunity. Because he says, there's a lot of better players out there, but they're afraid. They're afraid they're going to blow that moment. They're afraid to get the ball. He says, I want the player that wants the ball. And as he was telling me that, it just kind of erupted in my mind. that in a lot of ways, my story of relationship with the priesthood, I was, you know, decently athletic in high school and college. I never had a great high school athletic career in part because I didn't want the ball. I was afraid of blowing it. Like, I could play pretty well, but if the game was on the line, I did not want the football thrown my way. I didn't want the soccer ball kicked. It made me nervous, and I was just afraid. I didn't want the ball. And so I never, ever really found that next level because I was shy about it. But it's the opposite in the priesthood. And even from a young age, there was that desire, I want the ball. I recognize there are other people that are better at this than me, but I want that opportunity. Here at the house, I don't have a parish to preach to. And sometimes when a controversial topic is floating around in the culture, I'm like, give me a pulpit. I want to preach on this. I want the opportunity to do this. Others can do it better, but I want that shot. You know, even in tragedies, I want to be the person sitting on the couch next to that person. Do I have the answers? No. Do I have the best words? No. But if there's a tragedy with someone in my parish, I want to go to that. I want the ball. I want the opportunity to be with them to help. I want that opportunity. And as Chuck had told me that story, it just dawned on me. That's kind of always been there. Even as a young man, as a seminary, when I didn't fully know what I wanted, there was a desire, a holy ambition. I wanted the ball. I wanted the chance to do those things for the Lord, even knowing I might mess up, even knowing there are better people there. I wanted that. And that just kind of lit up a reality to me in my own discernment. But honestly, I've never actually talked. I've talked with discerners about that. I've never talked with other priests about that. So I don't know if that's just me, if that only makes sense to me, or if that makes sense to other priests, or if they've experienced it. So I don't know what your guys' experience in that line is.
Yeah, very similar. All that you were saying. I mean, I thought in my own story of just being in college. And yeah, maybe I got good grades in math and science in my engineering classes, but I just looked around and I could tell those people want that ball, and I don't want to do this. Like, I don't have a passion for doing this every day the rest of my life. And I see that in other people, even if I got a better grade than them or whatever. But then on the flip side of that, I did have a passion. I did want that ball if it was just talking to someone about prayer or, you know, teaching them something about the faith. Like, yeah, I want to do that. Even if, like you're saying, I recognize I don't do it that well, or someone can do it better, and I could even mess this up, but I still want to do it. There's something in me that has a desire to at least try. And so I don't know if I've ever really recognized that until now, but yeah, there's an element of following my desire there of where I wanted to give myself and where I wanted the ball. So
no free ads, but Father Mike Schmitz starts off a video that he does on in vitro fertilization. So this controversial, difficult, painful process and conversation, where he says, there's other people who could talk about this better than me, but I have the camera. And yeah, I like that. Yeah. Like, okay, yeah, there are definitely, but that's not how this works. And I'm willing to do it. I have the camera and the ability to get it out there. And so I'm going to do it. And so that was always, even with podcasting and stuff like that, and putting homilies online and things like that, I was, I don't want to do that. And Father Gale at K-State got on me. He said, have you prayed about your homilies? Yeah. Okay, you've given them to the Lord. Why in the world then would you want to just hide that so no one, I sure hope nobody sees or thinks about this except for these specific people? And when I didn't want to do the other podcast for a while, I was like, well, what do I have? Why would people listen to this rather than all of the other stuff? He's like, they can choose that. That's fine. But we do have the means. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think you have anything to say, if you don't think you have anything to say to the culture, to the world, what are you doing here? Yeah. Go be an insurance salesman. And okay, so that really spoke to me that, okay, yeah. And I do want that. I love doing that. But I needed to be challenged in that. It's not, you know, the basketball player who wants the ball at the end of the game, nobody thinks is, oh gosh, okay, it's all about him. No, you need people like that. Mm-hmm. And so if we as priests don't want, I sure hope nobody hears this homily that I gave or something like that. And most of the time these days, I don't post my homilies online or anything like that. But there is that something about, okay, did I pray about this? Do I think I have something to say because I've delved deeply into the word of God and I've spent time in silence about this? Then why would I cut that off as to who has access?
That's a good point. I never thought about that. But yeah, because I also am reticent about, I don't like having an online presence. But that makes a lot of sense.
There's plenty of reasons not to. There's plenty of reasons, but absolutely.
I think that's a really great argument
for it. What's your thought process for that? There's some danger to wanting the ball. I was going to tell you guys this story. I don't know that you know this story, but we're at the Mundelein basketball tournament. My first year at Kenrick, so you're not there yet. And I think maybe you guys had left early, so you're not there. We're playing in the championship game, Kenrick is, Detroit. And we had won the previous 2 years at Conception.
Detroit Seminary.
Yeah, not the Pistons. And I'm not that good at basketball. Usually when my skills basketball were D1, defense, rebounding, kind of getting in fight, fouling. Those type fouling hard and get away with
important
it.
Important contributions.
But that's the part of my life. I'm in the best. I just run a half marathon. I'm in the best shape of my life, and I played really well in this tournament. And it gets down, and we had kind of blown it at the end of the game. We're down one with 4 seconds left, and timeout. We got the ball, throwing it in. Okay, and I said, I want the ball, just like I had seen on TV, like I needed to do. And I want the ball. Okay, yeah, here's a play. And I barely hit the backboard on this last second championship winning shot. Barely hit the backboard. And everyone's looking at me like, what the heck? Why did we just let this dude? There was 5 other better shooters than me on this team. Why did I take this last shot? So it can be a little dangerous in some areas. But
famously, Kobe Bryant, in like his first year postseason, called for the shot the last and airballed it that put them out of the tournament. As Patriot State of basketball, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is a true story. I think Kobe Bryant.
Did you say Kobe Bryant?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
What
a moment.
I think that
big basketball guy.
You know, he was very popular.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Johnson. I think he called for the ball, and it actually pushed him to go to the next level because he completely airballed it. And if this is not a true story, then I mean some other famous basketball player and apply it to them. But
there's some great video compilations of how many game winners Michael Jordan missed, which I know this sounds cheesy, but it's true. Kobe and Michael Jordan missed way more game winners than they made. Statistically, they missed those shots more often than they ever made them. And so that's something to speak into.
Because to fill out that story from Drew, the next year, I was at Kinder.
That's right. I didn't even put that.
And we were playing, and it was a weird and really dumb thing that there was water on the floor, so we couldn't play the championship game. So we had a 3-point contest, which was a very lame way to decide a champion. But
we were not as good as this team.
And we were, yeah.
Father LeBenz was on this team, and Austin Long, who was in the seminary. This team was better than us.
But we had a 3-point contest, and you hit 2 of 3, you hit a couple threes, and the last one to end the game, I had not put that
together. And there's this moment in which I make the three to win the championship, and I like pump my fist, and Clay will tell the story, that I like stop myself pumping my fist. I'm like, this isn't that cool. I just won a seminary basketball championship on a 3-point shooting competition against a team that would have beat us by double digits. So actually, what are we doing here? But
you had to want the ball first and miss it.
Oh, this is good stuff.
But that applies too. I mean, you're talking about, statistically, they miss more than they made. And you got to be okay with that to be at their level. But same with the priesthood. A lot of guys like, we'll talk about, I'm afraid of messing this up or I won't do that. Yeah, you're going to. And you got to be okay with that. That's part of wanting the ball is, there are going to be some times I preach the wrong message from the pulpit or I say the wrong thing in this scenario. I'm going to miss some of those shots and I'm going to blow it. But the Lord is better than I am. He's going to take care of that even when I do it. But I got to keep putting myself in that position so that when the Lord does work powerfully through me, I'm there. I'm going to make that shot because the Lord's working through me. And you got to be okay with the missing some of those shots. It's part of wanting it.
And that's just the balance that it goes. So that's what I was thinking of. I think I had this holy ambition to start. Like there's even that book, right? To Save 1,000 Souls. Like there's some an ambition in that of I've always had this sense of just the weight of a soul. And so if my life can help even one soul go to heaven or 1,000 souls, like I want to do that. And then throughout seminary, there's kind of these ups and downs. And I'm like, there's humility, but some false humility in it of just like, well, I don't know if I could do it. You know, I'm a sinner and I don't always know what the right things to say. And maybe I would actually screw it up and I would lose a soul or, you know, all these, and it goes back and forth. And even, I had times where I just was like, I don't want to do something so grand. I'd rather just be normal. I've talked about that before, but then the Lord pulls that out of you and that's somewhat of a false humility and living in a fear of some things, whereas I'm calling you to something bigger and bolder and to live from that. And not because I'm going to be the one that saves 1,000 souls, obviously, but because God has called me and he's put that desire in me to at least put myself out there and want the ball and take the shot. Like you said, he'll take care of the rest. So
anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And so
I hate that saying, but there's a lot of truth to it. I hate it
every day,
though.
Every day. And I think it was Matthew Berry. So Matthew Berry is a fantasy football guy on ESPN. And this is years ago, but I don't know if he got a promotion or if he was really successful. Something happened in his life that went really well on ESPN. And there was this nice article written about him and headline for him and stuff like that. And he wrote a connected article saying how this article could have been written. And he wrote all of his failures. It's like, those are both, both these things are true. Like if you could have just written all of these things about me and all of these things that didn't go well and I messed up and things like that, And that's also a true part of my life too, but you can't have one without, it's false to have this successful article without all these things I messed up or didn't do well or out of my control, just didn't work out.
I would love that book in the Saint version. I was reading a thing on St. Francis de Sales, not, you know, he was a tremendous administrator, lots of great ideas, and only a couple are going to see the light of day. Now, we're going to remember those that do, but we forget all the ones that went before it. And I was reading something on Francis de Sales, and he had this idea, great idea, they were going to start a college, just focus on teaching people what they needed to know, but through the lens of faith. You know, we do that now, but it was pretty revolutionary for his era at the time. And it was going to really change the face of his diocese. And the college lasted 3 years before it folded just from lack of funds and lack of interest. Yeah. And it was just, it was like a two line thing in there. I'm like, I want to hear the entire story of this. Nothing against Francis, but that helps me just saying like, for sure. Yep, that he put a lot of eggs in that basket and that didn't go anywhere. But it doesn't change all these other wonderful things he did. And if he would have just done that and said, well, I screwed that one up, I guess I'm not going to be a saint. Might as well just call it in. What a loss that would have been to the church, to the world, to the people of God. I want to read the saints' books that is just a compilation of failed saints' ideas. That would be fascinating to me.
One of my favorite talks about Gregory the Great, because Gregory the Great gets to be the great because he just does a bunch of things he's not good at. That's most of his life. Gregory the Great's the ambassador to Constantinople. He doesn't speak Greek. And the emperor sends him there. He's like, what are we doing? What's happening here? I don't even speak this language. He wants to be a monk. He hates it here. And he wants to just be a monk, and he becomes a deacon at one point. And he wants to go to England, and they're like, nope, you got to be the Pope now. And so he just keeps having to do things he's bad at and becomes the great because he does things he's bad at.
I don't think I've ever heard it described that way, but it nails it.
It's one of my favorite things of I cannot become great if I do things that I'm good at. I will only become great if I do things I'm not equipped to do.
Luckily, that's a long list for me.
Yeah.
Leaves a lot of doors open. If I'm only doing the things I'm bad at.
So many things.
You're telling us.
Like me and Colby,
Colby Bryant, I can't believe that, man. This can be a little dangerous, and I was reading a book on the early German and Irish immigrants this week, and they talked about the edifice complex that these priests and bishops had, which I'd never heard that phrase.
Edifice.
You've heard Oedipus complex, the psychological edifice complex, to build big churches and schools and buildings for the glory of God, but also because for the glory of maybe the bishop, the priest, or the Irish people. Look how well and I can understand. I can't understand that, what it was like to be these immigrants in brutal neighborhoods of New York and the Northeast and things like that. So they wanted to build these spaces. So that can definitely creep in. So you just wanted, that's why you're talking to people. What are my intentions here? What are my desires here? What's going on in this space? So it's important to be, but you can also see we've seen that ambition in church politics and things like that in such a negative connotation. So ambition has a rightfully earned negative connotation in the church at times too. But if I'm afraid of that, then I throw the baby out with the bathwater and miss something.
And I think one of the guards against that, which I think we'll do a full episode on sometime too, is obedience and a good spiritual director, you know, because you're right. Because what the evil one classically likes to take a good and then twist it. So the desire to serve the Lord, this desire to, and then twist it into something ugly like the edifice complex or the negative ambition that can experience in church or anywhere there are humans involved, and he wants to twist it, but that we don't react so strongly against that to recognize, no, there is a good piece of this desire to do something from the Lord, and that this desire not only has goodness to it, but reveals to me some of what my own heart and how the Lord has made me. And so we want to be able to hang on with that truth without being pulled too far asunder.
Yeah, just that, finding that balance of the humility, but the ambition of it. I think there's some Ignatius quote or something like that. Are you going to talk about this?
I was just going to say, go ahead.
You tell it.
I was just going to say, Ignatius says, if everything that I have built was taken away from me, I would need 15 minutes of quiet in the chapel. And he's being probably a little dramatic there, but that's just what I was going to say. That the Jesuits and all this he's done and the Constitution, all these things. And if he was told to stop, all right, I'd be mad. And I'd need 15 minutes in the chapel and then we'd get back to work.
Well, and there's a number of saints examples. They found this order and for whatever reason, the leadership of it is taken from them. And then they're just kind of a background piece of this tremendous order for good. And that they just have to sit in the back, but them being okay with that and comfortable with that. And yeah, finding that balance, that desire to do great, but also being able to leave that in the Lord's hands. And it's a daily thing. It's not like any one of us sitting here has mastered it, like, but it does reveal something to our heart. Now, that's one of the important pieces I want to draw out for any guys that are discerning. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Drew has the final word today.
This is from the end of The Power and the Glory. It seemed to him at that moment that it would have been quite easy to have been a saint. It would have only needed a little self-restraint and a little courage.
See you next week.